Welcome to Behavioral Grooves. My name is Kurt Nelson.
And I'm Tim Houlihan. Given the strange and turbulent times that we are living through, Kurt and I decided to reach out to some of our favorite behavioral science researchers and practitioners to get their take on the novel coronavirus pandemic that is shaking the world.
These special edition episodes will explore a variety of different aspects of the crisis and our response to each of those aspects through a behavioral lens.
We know that you may feel overwhelmed by the crisis already. It seems every news story, every social media thread, every phone conversation that we have is focused on some aspect of the pandemic right now. While the news and updated information are essential, we're going to take a different tact. We want to try to understand the science behind our reactions and our behaviors and how science can help us cope and move beyond the current crisis.
In each episode, we talk with a different behavioral science expert and get their best thinking on an aspect of the crisis. So sit back, take a deep breath, and listen to our special series on behavioral science and the coronavirus pandemic.
Caroline Webb is an executive coach, author, and speaker specializing in insights from behavioral science to improve our lives at work. Her book on that topic, How to Have a Good Day, has been published in 14 languages and in more than 60 countries. She's a senior advisor to McKinsey, where she was previously a partner, but we just know her as a guest who was willing to record episode 33 two times. So Caroline, it's always a pleasure and welcome back to Behavioral Grooves.
Really happy to be back. Thank you.
So, in your book, you recommend some very specific actions to take in, you know, with how to have a good day at work, whether you're working from home or in an office. But now the UK is in lockdown. The whole world has changed. What do you think are the most important things that we should just remember if we're sheltering at home or are actually in lockdown?
Well, I think, first of all, to recognize that your energy is limited. And at the moment, there is so much coming in at us, so much information, and we only have a certain amount of conscious attention to give to the world. And at the moment, it's being very scattered and very stretched and in emotionally trying ways. And so I think, really so much of what I'm working on, so much of what I'm seeing people starting to think about is, where do I want to put my attention? Where do I want to put this precious resource? Are there ways to choose how I engage with the information that's coming in? Are there ways to organize my day so that I can pay attention in more structured ways? And so I think that is really it's always the currency of our existence, our attention. But at the moment, it's sort of forcing us to rethink how we deploy it.
So do you think there is that emotional fatigue that people are getting at this point? And are there tips or tactics that we can use to help alleviate that? Obviously, the attention is a big part of that. Are there other aspects that go beyond that?
Oh, yes. So where to start? I mean, certainly we know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll pick out some things that I think are small enough that you can do even when you're exhausted and overwhelmed, that will actually help to reduce the sense of overwhelm. I mean, I think one thing that we all know in the behavioral science community and people know increasingly outside the behavioral science community is that we have a little rule, a little heuristic that our brain follows in deciding where our conscious attention goes in the face of practically infinite information around us. We direct our conscious attention typically to things that match what's already top of mind for us. Mm-hmm. So if we've just heard some bad news, then whether it's through the mechanism we usually think of as inattentional blindness or confirmation bias or any number of the shortcuts that the brain takes that sit underneath this umbrella of what we might call a top of mind effect, you're going to get into a reinforcing circle that is going to mean that you'll see everything that is negative. And unless you very deliberately say, you know what, I am going to decide to look for something good in the next few minutes or in the next hour or today, then it's very easy with all of this bad news to have your brain naturally focus on everything that's negative and to miss some of the small good things that might be happening. So I think that's honestly probably one of the most powerful things on any given day. But actually right now to say, okay, everything is really complicated and horrible. Let me today look out for three good things. And then at the end of the day, to work the, you know, the peak end effect, to actually sit down and say, okay, what were the three good things today? And they might be tiny, let's be honest, right now, they can be some tiny things, but you're much less likely to miss them if you have taken a moment at the beginning to set that intention.
Yeah, attention, intentionality has come up several times in our conversations. Some of our recent conversations have even teed up the idea that now, in the face of a crisis, might be a good time to actually reset things. What do you think about the idea of resetting or changing things? Or is it better to try to find a sort of a status quo that just works?
Yeah, I can see two countervailing forces, actually. I mean, there is a sort of catastrophic version of the fresh start effect, where, you know, this is definitely a very, very new era for everybody. So maybe, and we know that habits are easier to break when the context around us changes. It is definitely an opportunity to say, okay, well, let's now develop a new way of being. But on the other hand, I do see people really being, and myself, you know, being tired and stretched. And you can see from data on how much people are online that people are online between 1 and 3 hours longer. You know, so that's partly because when you're working from home, it's a little harder to kind of say, okay, well, now I'm finishing my work. And it's partly because we're also looking at social media a lot. But with that extra overload, I lean a little bit towards also saying, please be kind to yourself. Yes, by all means, try to retain the habits that you had before, but maybe just say, okay, well, if you used to try and exercise every day, what would be like the smallest way of just doing a little bit of that? You know, is it doing some jumping jacks once an hour, or is it or once a day even? if you're like a musical maestro, as I know both of you are, you know, maybe you sign up for something like the Sofa Singers, where you're doing, you know, you're belting out a tune from your sofa in the evening. What is a small way of retaining your sense of self, your sense of identity, the things that you thought were important before, and not beating yourself up about not perhaps maintaining the high level of performance or quality that you achieved before in the world before? I think we'll be always thinking about this as, you know, well, before and after.
Yeah, this is truly, it's changed kind of, I think, the worldview and a lot of people's everyday, actually most people's everyday kind of lived life at this point. You brought up an interesting fact that people are online 1 to 3 hours longer now, and I think that's really interesting. I'm wondering if part of that is because this whole coronavirus, COVID-19, the information, as you talked about earlier, in our attention, but it's constantly changing. I mean, it is changing not just week by week, not just day by day, but, you know, sometimes hour by hour with new things coming out and a variety of different aspects that go into that. So there's a piece of this which is uncertainty, right? We all have an uncertain aspect of what's coming next, you know, what to do next. How much does that play in to how people are responding? And then what can we do about dealing with all the uncertainty that is surrounding this whole crisis?
I think that's a very good question, because I think that is, you know, that is definitely amplifying our sense of anxiety about what's going on. And the fact is, it's not just that we're dealing with a known bad quantity. We don't know how bad it's going to get. And research has shown that we do feel more intensely. We actually can see that there's a more negative, a more intense adverse reaction when people encounter threats that are perceived to be uncertain. There was a study done in my hometown of London, which is now where I'm sitting in lockdown, which had a bunch of people touching hot panels, which were really actually painful to touch. And they played around with the level of uncertainty that people were going to experience when they touched these hot panels by giving them either good information about what to expect, like, you know, most people said this was awful, most people said this was fine, or giving them noisy information about what to expect. So, you know, reports of how painful it was going to be being all over the place. So in that state, they've got much more uncertainty. And what they found was that people found the same temperature more painful when they were uncertain about what they were going to experience.
Wow.
So we know, right. So we know that this is obviously playing into the anxiety and the stress and the strain that everybody's feeling now. But as with many of these findings in behavioral science, if you turn it around, then there's often some good news buried in there. And the good news is that if you can amplify anything, which is a sense of certainty in the midst of all of this uncertainty, then you will downregulate the threat response. And so, okay, well, that sounds easy in principle, but where are the certainties? Okay. yeah. And they might be in, you know, what do you know for sure? And you might say, well, actually, nothing. Thank you very much. Nothing is certain. Well, but you probably do know what matters most to you, what matters most, you know, perhaps in your family context.
Mm-hmm.
There might be times that you've gone through tough situations before, perhaps nothing like this, but still you have gone through perhaps something that feels a little familiar. Maybe it's a bereavement, maybe it's a divorce, maybe it's some enormous upheaval, maybe you've been in a country where there's been an earthquake. So we do have some experience sometimes to draw on, and that's a familiarity, that's a certainty. You can say what helped me then, and you might be able to say, you know, what can I control and what can I shape? And in this context, it could be your attitude, pretty much, or it could be something you choose to learn from the experience. Back to your question of, could there be any opportunity to form new habits in this time? Well, maybe. And maybe there could be a way to learn to, you know, to use video broadcasting techniques, and that will actually be something that will serve you in future. And I'm not saying that these suddenly make you feel great about what is obviously an enormous dislocation, but the more you can amplify those certainties, the more clearly you can think and the more emotionally stable you can feel about everything else that's going on around you.
Something that really strikes me about what you just said is this whole idea of really empowering us as individuals to focus on what matters, to do these things ourselves, sort of irregardless of what the leadership is doing. You know, we're both living in countries right now with erratic leadership, and it's not good. It's not helping. But I like the idea that you're saying, well, let's just focus on what we can do at this time. What can I learn from this? How can I do things differently? And I think that's terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are things that we can do. We can choose to be kind. We can choose to reach out to people that we haven't heard from for a while. There are lots of things we can choose and we can choose to take control of. And the more we can shift the balance of our day towards that, then the better we'll feel about ourselves and our prospects.
So at the very beginning of this, you talked about attention. And again, with all of the incoming media that just seems overbearing, are there things that we should be doing to limit that incoming barrage of social media, news, newspaper, everything that we're getting from your perspective?
Well, I mean, of course, ironically, this is a topic that many of us have been thinking about for a long time, because the barrage of social media isn't just a phenomenon of bad times like this. It's been something that has been putting us in a state of continuous partial attention for quite a few years.
That's
and the
sure.
advice that I'm sure we've discussed before is absolutely to look for ways to batch your engagement with incoming information. Batch your tasks as much as possible, actually, into different, there's a chunk for reading and there's a chunk for thinking and there's a chunk for exploration. Sometimes that's just very hard to do, but you could at least say, you know what, I'm going to engage with social media twice a day or three times a day. And I am going to one of the things we've been experimenting with is setting a timer and saying, okay, so this is the timer. I've also got software on my my devices, which allows me to block certain websites between certain hours, which I used a lot when I was writing my book, which I'm rediscovering now. And it's really helpful, because then it reminds you of your intentions. You're like, oh yeah, okay, I did actually intend not to refresh New York Times 20 times in 30 yeah. seconds. Yeah. Well, I remember now.
I mean, social media is built on that, you know, addictive kind of thing. And so you get sucked into it, and to the point where, as you said, you know, you're refreshing the New York Times or whatever it is 20 times, and you don't mean to do that. It's just this mindless surfing that really isn't beneficial. So the idea of batching, I think, is really an important one that people can take and say, you know what? Yes, it's important for me to have information and to get that information, but I need to do it in a very purposeful way and limit that amount so that, you know, it isn't overtaking my entire life and bringing me down with every new click, every new news flash that comes on. So
yeah. And I think most of us have gone through a few phases on this, even in the last few weeks, maybe that some parts of the world are not yet there, but probably will be if they're not now, which is, you know, there is a period where you cannot tear your eyes away. And then you come out of that and you say, okay, what is the routine that I actually want to have that is going to keep me balanced and on an even keel? And then, you know, again, I'm always a big fan of not beating yourself up if you don't sustain it. But the more that you can socialize your commitment, the more that you can put in place guardrails that mean it's harder to renege on your commitment. I mean, all the things we know you know, those things are going to be very important for us right now.
You've shared a lot of things that are relevant to pretty much anyone who is sheltering at home or actually under lockdown right now. Are there any specific things that you could speak to that might help workers, people who are being forced to stay home when they're used to getting up and going to an office every day?
Well, people are not great at taking breaks in the best of situations, you know, in an office. And when you're working from home, I think that the tendency is, you're in a space often that makes it a lot harder to say, okay, I am now taking a break, especially if your country has gone into lockdown and you cannot actually technically leave the house. So I think that paying attention to your fatigue and noticing and being willing to sort of, I mean, as I say, I'm a big fan of timers, to set a timer for 45 minutes or 90 minutes, whatever is the right routine, to say, okay, now I'm going to get up and I'm going to stretch. Yeah. I'm going to stretch my arms above my head. I'm going to do whatever my favorite little stretch is, I'm going to do that. And I've been absolutely gobsmacked. There you go. There's a nice British word for you. I've been gobsmacked by, you know, I know all the research on breaks. I know that the quality of decision-making tends to decline longer it is since you've had a break. I know all of this stuff. I talk to people about this stuff all the time. And yet I've just been absolutely amazed at how I'm just sitting in the same chair all day and I'm just glued to so I am having to relearn some of my good habits because the context has changed. Yeah, so I think, taking breaks is definitely one of them.
You're not alone in that. We talked with Liz Fosslien, who, you know, wrote a book on emotions at work, and she knows all of this, and she was doing the same thing. She goes, I'm working from home and I get in efficiency mode and all of a sudden, you know, 3.5 hours have passed and I have not moved. I have not literally moved from my desk. Yeah. And she said, you know, I know all the research as well, and we need to do this. And I think you know, it's a changing time. And so we get stuck into these ideas that, hey, that's not the same world and I just got to get stuff done. But it also just comes as, you know, hey, it's hard. It is hard to do those. So I love the idea of timers. I love the idea of just having those little triggers in your day to say, you know what, now is the time to get up, move around, do something active, get your brain, refresh that, and then come back with a better attitude and better energy.
Yeah. And the other thing that I'm noticing is that because there is so much new information and uncertainty, you know, there is a general feeling that perhaps you have a tiny bit less control over your schedule than you did before if you're trying to work in this environment. And again, you know, this is true all the time, but it's even more powerful now to say, okay, well, if I project forward to the end of the day, to that future me, what am I going to be so happy that I did? What am I going to be so happy that I got done? And trying to get that done as early as possible. And I'm speaking as someone who's not a morning person, but just generally, it's going to be extremely helpful to say, okay, what is it that I'm going to feel so pleased to have got done? And how can I do that now before any number of distractions might enter the frame? And so I think, you know, that has really helped me in the last couple of days when I've been more deliberate in asking myself that question at the beginning of the day.
I love that. I love that. Would you mind if I asked you a slightly more personal question about how you and your husband are dealing with social things? We know that you're a musician, you're a singer, you sing in a choir. And how are you expressing yourself socially and creatively these days?
Well, socially, we are having dinner parties. I'm having lunch with friends.
You are?
I'm having...
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
But obviously over video. Oh,
virtually,
right.
Okay.
yes, just to be clear. Okay. But I mean, we're eating at the same time. Like we were sitting across each other in a cafe with a table between us, and we've got less background noise, so it's actually better in some ways. We can actually hear each other. Yeah, it takes a little bit of jigging around to be able to see, you know, everyone on screen. And so I think, you know, we're still figuring that out, but no, we're really trying to schedule those, you know, those little dinners and lunches. And it's really helpful. It's very grounding. Same with family. It makes a huge amount of difference. I know. And what I'm noticing is a lot of people who were really skeptical of the whole video calling thing before are now embracing it. They get it. And there's no, I don't think that that's going to ever roll back. I think people will see the power of actually being able to see each other's faces. And then I think they'll want to hold on to that after this period is through. But I haven't answered your question about creativity.
Yeah. So come on, share a little bit.
It's hard. It is hard because I think that, you know, you layer up from, okay, do we have enough food? Maslow's pyramid, which Maslow had nothing to do with, of course, and it's not actually his pyramid, but you know, it's definitely a shorthand that we've learned to use, which is, okay, you take care of the basics and then you think about how do I get my work done? And then you think about, okay, how do I stay mentally healthy throughout that? And then you say, oh, actually one of the things that helps me stay healthy is a little bit of exercise. Oh, and maybe a little bit of, you know, something else, something that gives you joy, something that gives you energy. So social connections are absolutely top of the list for me, but I have I've signed up for an online dance party tonight.
Wow.
I have signed up for a couple of online singing thingies, which, you know, it's a little odd, but it's kind of fun. I'm trying, and I'm using music throughout the day, less during work, but more in the evening to delineate daytime work and evening, because it's very hard when when everyone's in the house to separate work and play. Actually, music can be a really good delineator for that. So putting on some peppy music in the evening.
I love that. We've talked a couple different times about, you know, setting up the start and end of your day routine so that you don't just continue it. And I think music could be a really good routine to get into that. Hey, at the end of the day, when you're done with your work, let's put on a different set of music or put music on as a way to delineate that apart from, you know, the work part of your day. So
yeah.
I love that idea.
Yeah. And I wouldn't wish anybody, I wouldn't want them to listen to me, you know, belting tunes into my webcam.
I don't know. I would argue with that.
It gives me a lift. And, you know, the dance thing is actually new. That's new for tonight. I'll see how that goes.
So I'm going to actually ask Tim a question because Tim, you are, you know, in the same boat. I am less musically inclined than both of you by a factor of 100. So, but what are you doing for your, I know that we've talked a little bit about this, so why don't you share with listeners what you're doing about this creativity output?
Well, I'm being more intentional about practicing and rehearsing, you know, focused just on playing music to kind of heal my soul. And I'm also going to be doing, I want to do monthly house concerts. House concert meaning set up a video camera in the house and record it and let other people, you know, jump online and see it. I have some friends who in Central America after the hurricanes a few years ago set up a group called Teatro de Fragua. And their focus was to bring theater into villages that were decimated. Once they got food, the next human need they saw was we need to have entertainment. And so my hope is that by doing some house concerts, just, you know, 30, 45 minute sets at a time is kind of how I'm approaching it. And just playing for people and, you know, getting that feedback and getting some conversation going, hopefully.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I really like that. That's wonderful.
Well, I hope it works.
that's a lot better than But that's a higher ambition than I have. I'm very impressed.
So Caroline, tell us more about what. Let's get back to some tips you think that people should be that might guide them through this really challenging time. What are the things that you think could help people deal with what's going on today?
Well, one thing that is worth mentioning is our old friend, the fundamental attribution error, which is obviously for those for whom this isn't top of mind. It's the error that we make in attributing bad behavior to bad character instead of bad circumstances. And given that the majority of the population, really the vast majority of the population, is not a psychopath, actually, typically, bad behavior will be down to some circumstances. And of course, that's very much the case at the moment. Most people are doing their best. They're trying hard. It's very stressful. It's stretching. It's upsetting. Some people are facing death and disruption. It's going to be very difficult for people to be at their best through this period. So one thing that I have done for myself, but also advised others to do, is when you get the slightly spiky email, pause and give the benefit of the doubt and just say, okay, what are the circumstances that could be behind this? Well, actually, you don't have to think very hard right now to imagine what the circumstances could be. But actually, you're just taking a moment to say, okay, I wonder what might be going on here. I wonder what I might do to be at least soothing, even if I can't actually help.
It kind of reminds me of Hanlon's razor, right? Don't attribute to malice, which could easily be explained by stupidity.
Yes.
And we're kind of living in that world right now. What do you think the pandemic will do in terms of influencing the way that we work?
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, we've already talked about the fact that it's likely that it will accelerate a trend that was already underway towards less travel and more virtual working. I think that, you know, it is hard to build new habits, but all of a sudden people have had to embrace a new way of working that was perhaps, you know, a niche thing before. And I think that it will have forced people over the hump of learning how to use video conferencing tools and so on. So I think that's not going away. And I think that, you know, if I look at what I see in a number of companies that I'm close to, they are working frantically to put in place a whole new architecture for collaborating together. It's not just, you know, having meetings where it's just talking head to talking head, but, you know, how do you do a problem solving session together? How do you, any number of things that were very reliant on people being around a whiteboard together? How do you think differently about doing that? So I think that is not going away. I do think there could be, I mean, some other things. I think that there could be a lasting recognition of the importance of personal life and family and community. I feel like, you know, there was for many years this sort of sense that you showed up at work and you put your game face on and you you know, you were buttoned up, and then there was a sort of separate self that was your personal life. And I think that that was somewhat eroded in the last few years with more millennial humanness entering the workforce. But I think that there's been a bit of a reset for everybody, a bit more of an understanding that we're a whole people bringing ourselves to work. And I do wonder whether there'll be more of a focus on sustainability. You know, we're going to have to be very attentive to not wasting resources in the next few months. And I think that that might also feed into how we work long term.
Talk about sustainability, if you would, for just a minute. Tell us what you're thinking of when you use the term sustainability.
Well, I think that, you know, many of us have directed more and more attention towards the climate emergency, the climate change that we're all facing. I think that with what's happened with the pandemic, we've become brutally aware of the interconnectedness of our world, and that what happens in one country can have an effect on what happens everywhere else. And I think that, you know, I'm just noticing myself, I'm an avid recycler, absolutely was sort of working hard on reducing use of plastics and so on. The whole situation has just gone up a gear now as I'm thinking, okay, well, what can I use that for? What can I use that spray bottle for? Could I put some rubbing alcohol in it? What might I use that for in a different setting? Maybe I'll just wash it out and keep it and figure it out. Trying to figure out how to make our resources go further. And I think that, you know, obviously much of that is on a very home-based level at the moment. But I think it has to, I imagine that it will change the sense of personal connection we have with discussions of sustainability coming out of this.
You brought up this idea of, you know, bringing in that this is a worldwide problem. And so the interconnectedness between, you know, the different countries. Do you think there's any element of this that is going to really highlight that moving forward, so that people are less country specific? I know, you know, that's a pretty hard thing to think about from Americans, because we are pretty, you know, self-contained, you know, America is number one, all of those aspects. But I think there's a realization throughout this, or at least I hope there's this realization of how interconnected the world has become, not just because of the virus spread, but also just the information that we're getting from all around the world about how this is impacting various different levels and the interconnectedness that we have and just, you know, the communication that we get. Wondering if you think that's going to continue, or if that is one of those things that will, when this is done, it'll kind of go back to a status quo of what it was.
I think there are going to be two forces pointing in opposite directions. I think that we, you know, even the casual observer might now realize the interconnectedness of global supply chains. I think, you know, everybody's just much more conscious now of that. And I don't think that's going to go away. But I think the reduction in travel and the localization of, you know, just sort of staying put and reducing the amount that you're flying around. I think, you know, that could point a tiny bit in the other direction. But I think what has become clear is that the lack of coherent, cohesive leadership across countries has really hindered our ability to respond. And after the Second World War, we ended up with a post-war boom in creation of supranational institutions. You know, in the Bretton Woods era, so the IMF and the World Bank were created in that era. So it's not, you know, it is possible that we'll see a renewed commitment to an international approach. I'm not sure. I can see these two forces pulling in two different directions.
Yeah, I see the same thing.
It's interesting that you bring up World War II and focus on this idea of creating supranational institutions.
Supernatural institutions.
No, they were not supernatural. Yeah, but these supranational institutions grew very naturally out of World War II. And
yeah.
And we're not in an age, we're in an age today where populism is driving so much of world politics. And just the opposite of esprit de corps, there seems to be world right. leaders are much better at selling the story of pull things apart.
Yeah.
So how is that going to impact us?
Well,
I don't know how to.
Yeah, you're asking 30,000.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did question. Have a first career as an international economist. So
yes, you know, you did.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually,
spoken at Davos,
I used to be.
This is your thing.
I know. I used to be one of the people that actually was responsible for the world economic forecast that was used in UK monetary policy. So that was, yeah, I mean, you know, I was very clear that then the reason we cared about it so much was that the UK was a tiny country and whatever happened in the rest of the world was an enormous input to any kind of forecast that we made about the UK economy. So I think if you're in a small country, you've got little doubts about the way that you're affected by the rest of the world. Yeah, look, I mean, I think I do see the seeds of a problem in the closing of borders and the increase and the risk that there will be suspicion of the other, suspicion of the outsider. Mm-hmm. You know, we know how in-group and out-group works. We know how readily we can cast someone as an outsider. We also know how readily you can cast someone as being in your in-group. And I think for those of us who are conscious of these issues, I think, you know, it'll be important for us to keep reaching out across boundaries and emphasizing points of commonality rather than difference.
Thank you for saving me on that one.
Well, that was a really tricky question you just asked me.
It was, Tim. I think that was the most throwing somebody under the bus question we had. It's like, answer.
That was
not all the world problems. Here you go.
So clearly wanted a happy answer, and I just wasn't sure.
Oh, God. Good to laugh.
Well, Caroline, I think it's about wrapping this up here. But is there any last, idea just that you would like to let our listeners think about or understand as we leave this and thinking about what's coming up in the future and how we cope with this and anything that you can think that might be helpful as we go into, you know, basically week two here in the U.S. and you know, the rest of the world is in various different stages of this.
Well, one thing that we know about human beings is that we adapt and we habituate. We get used to, we roll with new normals periodically throughout our history. And we do find ways to be who we are in a new way as our situations change. And I am optimistic that we will find that resourcefulness in ourselves, but we do need to pay attention to what it takes for us to be our best selves. So all of the things we've talked about today and paying attention to your relationships and paying attention to your physical activity and your mental health and amplifying your certainties. I think if we can do these things, then we will find solutions and ways through even as we move through some of the hardest times we've ever experienced. And I think that, you know, we need to be kind to each other and we need to be kind to ourselves and kind to each other. And that will carry us through a lot of what lies ahead.
Wow. Caroline, thank you. That, I think that summarizes this up very nicely. And the insights that you've shared today, you know, we've been talking to a lot of people and there's a lot of brand new stuff here. So I really appreciate that. Yeah.
I'm really glad. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're always a delight to talk to.
Welcome to the special edition grooving session where Tim and I groove on some of the key concepts and ideas that we learned or were inspired by our conversation with Caroline Webb. All right, Mr. Tim, what do you want to groove on for this one?
Can I just say it's always so great to talk to Caroline?
It is. It is.
Like, man, she just challenges us with great ideas in a really, and talk about a gentle way, but she's always got really thoughtful and insightful things to say. I'd like to start with our energy is limited.
Our energy is limited.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that we choose what we pay attention to, right?
Because we can. We actually can choose to pay attention to certain things and not pay attention to other things. So being purposeful, being intentional, engaging our system two thinking, our deliberate thinking is really important during this time. And it's tiresome. It's fatiguing because we're already bombarded with so much crap.
So is that why I'm tired all the time now? Or is it just because I'm not getting any exercise and I'm getting fatter and fatter and fatter from anyway, that's enough about me.
No, but enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Let's talk about me some more. Here we go. No, the other piece of this, which when she said that it kind of brought this to top of mind for me, is that this virus, this COVID-19 pandemic, is almost like it was designed purposely to grab our attention. If you think about how this actually works, is there's this randomized information that we get. We don't get it on a set schedule. It happenstance. Some days it's really important. So we get, you know, it's the lottery effect. There's that dopamine release when we get a new piece of information that we want to know about how this is going to kill us or not kill us, or what's going to happen, what's not going to happen. There's a bunch of uncertainty around it. So anytime that we get that information, it adds to hopefully some additional certainty, which we strive and we look for. It's vivid, right? It's an emotionally charged. There's this opportunity of not opportunity. There's this potential of death or sickness that comes with it. Our loved ones are at risk. It impacts us as a society, the economic downturn that happens because of all of this. And there's a tribal aspect that's becoming more and more apparent as this kind of goes on, that we tend to, you know, follow those leaders that we believe in, and then it's us versus them. And so you want to reinforce that self-identity, that social identity that you have. So it seems like it's almost perfectly aligned with the attention grabbing element that just is overtaking many of our lives.
Yeah. I was also thinking, we had talked a little bit about how she uses music at the end of the day. She blocks off, she uses a trigger. She gets to the end of the day, she shuts down her computer, and the first thing is, now I'm turning on happy music. Now I'm turning on something fun. And what a great priming tool. What a great way of bookending your time, of being very explicit about, I'm moving from A to B. I'm living in a different world now. And it's all about control. And that's a really important part of our purposeful and deliberate thinking and living that we need to be doing these days.
Well, we talked with Wendy Wood, and that episode's going to be coming out in, you know, a few days after this one. And one of the things that she talked about is that habits and these routines that we have, these ability to bookend things, actually help us cope with this whole crisis. They take some of that emotional turmoil away. And so to that degree, I think anything that we can do in order to provide some stability and some certainty in these times, and habits and routines, putting on music at the end of the day as a demarcation between work and now non-work, I think all of those are important. And going back to what Caroline was talking about we can choose how and what we pay attention to, and her idea about batching things, right? Set up times to do things, block out specific times, use triggers. You know, she talked about timers and website blockers and various different things. All of those, I think, can help us weather this really attention-grabbing storm that we need to pay attention to, but do we need to be sucked in as much as we are? Well, outside of listening to these series of episodes, probably not, right?
And are we doing a good job if we're spending 1 to 3 hours every day more than we would normally do on the internet?
Right? That was crazy. I didn't realize, if you think about multiply that by the number of people that are out there, and that's crazy. I did look up some research, and it was from Verizon from last week. So when people hear this, it's about probably a week old, and they had reported a usage increase of 75% increase for gaming, 34% increase for VPN, 20% increase in web traffic and 12% increase in video streaming. So people are going and utilizing the internet for a number of things, gaming, obviously, just to get away. But that VPN, web traffic increase, all of those things go that, into.
A lot of that's work-related stuff, but gaming might be somehow connected to this 3 million new people who have applied for unemployment in the United States. You know, that's up from normally, you know, 100,000.
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh. That's not anything that you should be laughing at. It's really sad, but it's true. There's a number of people who now have a lot of time on their hands. We're in a whole different environment where we're not driving into work. So commute times are no longer there.
Right.
A variety of different factors that play into all of this.
Yeah. Caroline wrote a really wonderful piece, and we referenced him when we were talking to her, this blog post she did on uncertain times, how to deal with uncertain times. And one of those big tips that she talked about in our conversation was amplifying certainty. Mm-hmm. I thought that that was really, really great. This idea of, she gave lots of examples about this, right? But what can we do to control our response to how things are happening to us, right? Amplify the certainty that we can have in our lives and kind of push the stuff that we just can't control, just push that off.
Right. Having that idea of being able to look for something good too. And then at the end of the day, go back and look at that. Those were some really cool ideas. This amplify certainty and look and find what you can control is very stoic in nature, in my belief, right? I heard that and I'm like going,
do you read the Stoics?
Like, I do.
Are you into Buddhism and, you know,
yeah, I'm not an expert by any means, and I'm still at the very cusp of just learning. But, you know, there's that the idea in Stoicisms of, you know, you can't control what happens to you, but you can choose how you respond to that. And this is in some ways a very Stoic kind of control. Find what you can control and then control it.
Right.
And don't worry about the other things that you can't control, because there's nothing that you can do about that anyway.
Yeah.
So to that degree, find those things that you can have a semblance of control about, going back to some of the habits that we've established, some of the things that you can focus your attention on, focus attention things on good versus negative. All of that, I think, are really important as we're going through this.
Yeah. What else came to your mind? What else was impactful to you in our conversation with Caroline?
I mean, there's a lot. Obviously, the one piece at the end where we talked about the global connection, and I thought it was really insightful for Caroline to talk about these two forces in opposite directions about, are we going to go more global or are we going to go more nationalistic or even, you know, community-based or tribal-based, however we want to talk about that. But, you know, we look at the world today, and the virus, I think, really points out that we are globally interconnected. The speed at which this has transferred across the world is facilitated by how globally interconnected that we are.
Right.
And that goes to supply chains, it goes to communication, it goes to the impact that, you know, American movies are shown around the world. We're importing cars from China. We're getting a number of, you know, Japanese anime things that are looking at, you know, you can look at anything now. And there's a global connection, both culturally as well as economically, and interrelatedness. And I'm hoping that this really highlights that for people, and that we start thinking of the human species as a human species and not as individual nations and countries.
Well, where do you think most of the N95 masks are being manufactured?
It's probably
China. I mean, China manufactures for the whole damn world. So
yeah.
It's hard to imagine that just given the base rates that most of the N95 masks are made outside of China. It seems likely that most of them are made in China. And I just want to make sure that we talk about super national institutions rather than super natural institutions, because I Yeah, exactly. I know I will never live that down, but we are talking about super national institutions and the whole idea of getting organizations that rely on the interconnectedness of all of us just seems to make more sense to me.
Well, again, the response to this should have been much more coordinated than it was.
It could have been.
It could have been and should have been. And again, hindsight is 20/20. You can always look back. I mean, you know, let's not result on this, but we could, you know, looking forward, you know, doing a pre-mortem, if something like this or some other externality, as Barry Ritholtz called this, happens that we haven't necessarily accounted for, you know, having some global institutions that we can turn to help coordinate our response,
yeah,
might be a good hedge to take.
Well, we're having enough trouble with our coordination within the United States. There is still a tremendous amount of coordination issues on masks and ventilators specifically, as well as all the residual equipment that is required to make these things work. So it's tough. Okay, what do you want to end on here?
I loved how Caroline brought up this idea that in this crazy, uncertain multitude of perspectives environment that we are in, we need to be our best selves,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that we will adapt, that we are adaptable creatures. If anything, that has been shown over and over and over, and that, you know, we will find solutions for this. And I think that's just really important as we think about this, right? Be kind to each other.
Yeah.
Be kind to ourselves.
Yes. Yes.
Look for the good. Choose to focus. Choose what you want to focus on. Don't let, you know, the craziness of all this in, you know, get into you. You need to make sure that you're choosing how to approach it and how you respond.
I don't know how long it will last, but my recollection of getting in the car and driving to work in the days following 9/11, there was a couple things that are still vivid in my memory. One, people drove slower than they had prior to 9/11, that the average speed in miles per hour in the U.S. was like 65 to 70 on the way to work. And after 9/11, virtually no one was going over 55 miles an hour, the speed limit on the freeways. And the second thing that I remember very vividly was the amount of kindness that was shown when someone wanted to move from a middle lane into a right lane to prepare to exit. That there was all this grace and all this ease of course, we're going to let you in. And if someone accidentally cut someone else off, you could see the looks on drivers' faces that was just very pleasant and easy. And it's like, look, no, don't worry about it. It, you know, stuff happens. And I hope that that happens today. I hope that as we start to come back together and we start to get back in our cars and commute on a bigger basis, that we can expand the amount of time that we spend being nice to each other.
That would be fantastic. I just hope that unlike 9/11, where that happened immediately afterwards, but soon dissipated, that if it does indeed happen, that it stays, that it is sticky, and that we continue this not just for a week or a month after this is all done, but for years and years and years. Thank you for listening to the special episode of Behavior Grooves. We hope that you found it interesting and insightful. If you liked it, please let others know. We think that the topic is important, and maybe we can help in educating people about how behavioral science can help us all out in this current craziness that we are going through.
Also, please let us know if you have any thoughts or ideas that would be helpful or that we could share. You can reach us through the Connect tab on the Behavioral Grooves website at www.behavioralgrooves.com or through Twitter. I'm at T. Houlihan and Kurt is at What Motivates. We really do love hearing from you, and this topic is one that spurs lots of emotions and thought.
As part of our mission, we want to expand and inform the community of people who think about positively applying behavioral science to life. One way that happens is through leaving reviews. If you think this podcast is beneficial and should grow, we would really appreciate to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast server you use.
It only takes a few minutes and goes a long way to boost us in the algorithms that are used to generate search results.
Also, please check out the show notes. We are linking to a number of resources, articles, podcasts, newsletters that we've vetted to bring good facts and ideas around COVID-19 and the coronavirus, its impact, and ways that we can help slow down the spread. There is a lot of information that's being pushed out to everyone each day, and we are weeding through it to find good stuff so that you don't have to.
We truly appreciate you listening. Now go out and wash your hands.